Sunday morning, 4/24/22, this is a learning to flow in the supernatural. The title is Symbolism Will Be Their Downfall. All right, in our mission to take out the strongholds of the enemy, it is imperative that we take not of the clues that, wait a minute. Oh, it's imperative that we take note of the clues that the evil ones leave behind. This is what Q meant when he said this, symbolism will be their downfall. One of the first I can remember in the association and all of this was Pizzagate, with the child trafficking, the pedo symbols on clothing, toys, even ice cream. Evil leaves clues. We can look around us now and see them everywhere. Before, they were hidden in plain sight. The swamp has indeed come to the surface all over the earth. The goal in this teaching is to make us more aware of these things personally so that we can wage a good warfare. Our goal is to take out the enemy, but if there are hindrances in the way, well, anyway, it'll expose the hindrances that are in the way. Okay, I'm going to read to you Daniel chapter 10 right quick. Verse 1, in the year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belshazzar, and the thing was true, but the time appointed was long, and he understood the thing and had understanding of the vision. In those days I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. And in the 24th day of the first month, as was by the side of the great river, which is Sidekel, then lifted up my eyes and looked, and beheld a certain man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with fine gold of Uphaz. His body also was like the beryl, and his face as the appearance of lightning, his eyes as lamps of fire, and his arms and his feet like in color to polished brass, and the voice of his words were like the voice of a multitude. Sounds like Jesus. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Therefore I was left alone and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me into corruption, and I retained no strength. Yet heard I the voice of his words, and when I heard the voice of his words, then was I in a deep sleep on my face, and my face toward the ground. So he was in a trance. Behold, a hand touched me, which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands. And he said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly loved, and understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright, for unto thee am I now sent. When he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling. Then said he unto me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thy heart to understand, and to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I am come for thy words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 120 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. Now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people in the latter days, for yet the vision is for many days. So we see here Daniel in his time had opposition to his prayers. Nothing's changed. Satan is still the prince of the power of the air. And that is why we stand in our armor, Ephesians 6. All right, let's go to that. If it would have changed, it probably we wouldn't have to do this, but it has not changed. All right, Ephesians 6:10. What I want to glean from this morning is becoming more finely tuned in to spiritual mapping and taking out strongholds, whether it be personally or in our area or the nation, however the Lord leads us to do so, and how to recognize what we need to do. Verse 10, finally, my brethren, Be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. That's why it shouldn't be a shocker that some of the demons crowd was on the moon. They messed with everything else. High places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand. See, we've got more than Daniel had. We've got the name of Jesus. We can bind and loose, plead the blood. Stand, therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having, and our biggest, really, warfare is to stand and not be moved. No, I'm not backing down. No, you're not taking this ground. No. Get over it. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil. He will flee from you. You can just stand. Never do anything. And win. And your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, above all taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fire darts of the wicked. Take the helmet of salvation, the sword of spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayer, supplication in the spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. All right? We target spiritual map at the leading of the Holy Spirit to be able to take out the strongholds of the devil. It's not any different than keeping our mouth and speaking the right things out of our mouth. God will give us the word that we need to speak concerning strongholds and areas that we need to speak to. I mean, we're experiencing that. When we read the proclamations, the Lord will start leading us in an area and have us speak certain things. He does that to me all the time. I may just speak at one time concerning that area, but, you know, I try not to let that get past, those get past me because I need to finish this and get on with my business. No, if he starts leading us, go with it. Because he's showing us where we need to target. All right? We want to be effective in pulling down those strongholds. What can cause us to be hindered? Getting into negativity. Not walking in love. Having in our possession things that attract demonic activity. All right, I'm going to read to you. I'm going to have quite a bit of reading today. And I want you to just consider it. I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm just saying you need to let the Holy Spirit lead you. And if he leads you in this area, then you go with it. I mean, years ago, we kind of got into some of this and we thought it was kind of silly, but I don't believe so. I don't believe it's silly. All right. Now, this is C. Peter Wagner. In his book, it's called Breaking Spiritual Strongholds in Your City. And he and his wife were missionaries in Bolivia for many years. And I was talking to a friend Friday. She was talking about someone she knew that they had been a missionary and had brought back all these masks and things from Mexico. And they started having all these problems. They had to get rid of all of it. All right. This is Cleansing Wagner's Living Room. Readers of other books in this series will know that my wife Doris and I have had to deal with evil spirits in our home in Altadena, California. In one of the books in this series, Prayer Shield, I detailed the story of my fall off of a ladder in my garage and how I believe that Kathy Scheller's intercession at that time literally saved my life. Evidence points towards attributing it to the direct work of an evil spirit. In another book, Warfare Prayer, I told of Doris actually seeing a spirit in our bedroom and of how Kathy Scheller and George Eckhart suddenly came to our house and exorcised the spirits. Kathy and George had found some spirits in our living room, or more in our living room than any other rooms. When they left, they felt they had evicted all of them except for one, which they discerned was attached to a stone puma from the Quechua Indian culture we had acquired while we were missionaries in Bolivia. The puma was not an antique, just a tourist reproduction, but nevertheless, the visible had apparently attached itself to the visible. Now I know in the book by Gary Greenwall, he talks about this man in some other country where evidently they had monks and stuff. And the monk, there was little statues in their shrine or whatever, and the monk told him, each statue had a hole in it. He said, that's where the demon comes in and out. Besides the puma, we had as wall decorations two pagan masks used by the Chiquita No Indians and two carved wooden lamps representing the Amara Indian culture. Okay. When Doris and I returned home from work that day, we had some decisions to make. Where do we draw the line? We had three different sets of art objects from three of Bolivia's Indian cultures. The puma, believing that an evil spirit had attached itself to the puma, the decision was simple. The puma had to go. We took it outside, smashed it up, and threw it in the garbage. The mask, if Kathy and George's discernment was accurate, no spirits had attached themselves to the mask. However, those masks were not tourist reproductions that had actually been used by the Chiquitano Indians in their animistic ceremonies designed to glorify these tribal spirits. Even with the little we knew in those days, this seemed to be reason enough to get rid of the mask, which we did. The lamps were something else. They were beautiful works of native art. They were carved and varnished reproductions of Inti, the sun god, who was one of the territorial spirits of the highland Amara Indians. They were one of the most expensive items we brought home from Bolivia. They matched our decor perfectly. They were not demonized as the puma was, so we discussed it and decided we should regard them as native art and not as idols or unclean objects. We kept the lamps. We kept them until the first time Cindy Jacobs, which is a well-known prophetess, Cindy Jacobs visited our home. Cindy, the author of the following chapter on demonic strongholds, was way ahead of Doris and me in her discernment of spirits and knowledge of spiritual mapping. She stepped into her living room and with a rather shocked look on her face said, "What are those things doing here?" pointing to the lamps. We explained that they were just harmless souvenirs to remind us of our days in Bolivia. Then Cindy said gently, "Well, why don't you pray about them?" And the subject did not come up again. After Cindy left, we did pray. This time God directed us to take a different approach to our decision. We finally realized we had never asked ourselves the most crucial question, does these objects glorify God? In light of what we were by then understanding as the biblical truth on the visible and the invisible, the answer was obviously no. The hands that had made the lamps, skillful as they might have been, changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man. That's Romans 1:23. The net result was to bring glory to the sun god Inti, who is the creature rather than the creator. The lamps also had to go. Later we read Deuteronomy 7:25 and 26, referring to carved images of gods, exactly what our Intis were. It says they are abominations to the Lord, and then, "Nor shall you bring an abomination into your house, lest you be doomed to destruction like it. You shall utterly detest it and utterly abhor it, for it is an accursed thing." We saw clearly how wrong we were in regarding the lamps as harmless native art. Our house was cleansed. It was only recently that our adult daughter, Becky, told us that while she was a child growing up in the house, she would never go into the living room alone. She was not able to verbalize it then, but she sensed it was contaminated with dark powers. How ignorant we parents were. Okay. Like I said, don't go looking for anything, but if the Lord speaks to you about it, at least you're aware. All right, this is national demonization. This is what our nation's going through. We've got demonic symbolism all over our nation. Our capital city has a phallic symbol. The Statue of Liberty is also a demonic symbol. Everything is laid out in a pentagram. The Pentagon is a pentagram. And we wonder what the problem we're having in our nation. The things. It's a wonder we've done as well as we've done. All right, this is about Haiti. All right. I have attempted to stress that ignoring the reality of invisible powers behind visible aspects of daily life can have serious and even devastating effects, both individually and socially. Two nations have recently taken foolish official action on the highest government level to invite demonic principalities to empower their land, Haiti and Japan. Now, we know about what happened with the Clintons in Haiti. This is even before that all this started happening, the decline in Haiti, where they could come in and do something like that. See, they tried to traffic, was it 35 children, some aid to Hillary Clinton. She got caught trafficking those children out of Haiti after the earthquake happened. That's why they have these events, as they come in and they confiscate the children. Haiti had long been the poorest nation of the Western Hemisphere through the years. Religion brought by the Roman Catholic Church has not helped. Vigorous Protestant missionary work has not helped. Politics have not helped. Foreign aid has not helped. Perhaps Haiti's greatest ray of hope for a better future came in December 1990 when Jean-Bertrand Aristide became the first democratically elected president in Haitian history. On a state of 11 candidates, he received 67% of the vote, a relatively unheard of phenomenon in multi-party elections. Things were looking up. A few months after Aristide's inauguration, Jim Shahim reported, "Haiti seems like a different place." It's kind of like when President Trump stepped in after the stink of the last five demonic presidents. "Haiti seems like a different place. Human rights violations are down. The boat people exodus stopped. Aristide, is in a visit to Paris, received promises of $5 million for a variety of projects. People were talking about the new mood. Even one of Aristide's political opponents called him our Messiah of hope, preserving cultural roots. Then Aristide, whether knowingly or unknowingly, as he is also a Catholic priest, made a serious spiritual mistake. On August 14, 1991, he officially requested that Haiti's top voodoo witch doctors lead a national observance of the voodoo ceremony of Boukman to rededicate the nation of Haiti to the spirits of the dead. The ceremony typically involves animal and some say human sacrifice. Why? Purportedly to preserve Haiti's cultural roots." You talk about multicultural, they don't get any more multicultural than the United States. A month or so later, on September 29, 1991, Aristide was ousted by a military coup. Haiti took a socio-economic nosedive. An international embargo was imposed. Normal economy became virtually non-existent. Tens of thousands of jobs were lost, many irrevocably. Months after the coup, Howard W. French reported, "Port-au-Prince, a bustling city in normal times, now often seems a dusty ghost town. Public services were suspended because of lack of gasoline and garbage was piled high on the street." Sounds like the U.S. now. Especially the Democrat-run states. "Many foreign investors gave up totally on Haiti. The nation reached the highest point on the human misery scale." A lot of those Haitians are coming over here now. What really happened? Political analysts are trained to see the visible. They said Aristide was overthrown by the rich because he was a liberation theologian and favored the poor, or that military officers turned against him because of his anti-drug policies and his desire to form a security unit outside army control. There are other reasons. Spiritual mappers, however, see the invisible. See, we're not looking at what's on the surface, but what's in the unseen realm. Although not negative, not negating the validity of the political analysis, they see behind it the sinister working of spiritual powers using human beings and social structures such as the military for their own ends. Not only the voodoo practitioners, but the territorial spirits ruling over Haiti were delighted to accept the president's invitation to national demonization. Once they had their legal strongholds to victimize Haiti's masses by stealing, killing, and destroying, they had no more use for their friend Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and they relegated him to the political trash heap. His plan to reaffirm Haitian culture backfired because he could not discern the invisible evil from the visible good. You know, some of the things the Lord has had me speak in this last petition that I gave out was that we were one band, one sound. You come into this country, you learn the language. You no longer are an African-American. You no longer whatever American. You are an American. Where we go one, we go all. We stand together in this nation. It's one nation under God. You know, that's the way it used to be. You used to have to know the language to come into the country. And I believe that's led of the Spirit, because we need to be unified. How they segregated us and separated us. Well, we've got the blacks over here, which is the biggest one that they have. It's been such a mess. But it's not just them. It's all, they're trying to divide us in every way they possibly can. House divided against itself can't stand, whether it be a normal house or a nation. All right, Japan. I once asked David Youngie Cho why he thought churches grew so rapidly in Korea but not in Japan. His answer surprised me. Although recognizing that there are so many reasons, one, he suggested, was the serious damage done to traditional Korean culture through 36 years of Japanese occupation and subsequently through communism from the North. Christianity grew relatively unhindered by traditional Korean paganism. On the other hand, Japanese culture has been virtually uninterrupted for 3,000 years. Paganism is deeply rooted in the warp and woof of the nation. The spirits over Japan have had their way, and they are not prepared to allow Christianity more than a token presence. The most serious setback for Japan's territorial spirits came during a 7-year period following World War II. Despite a Buddhist facade, Japan's most deeply entrenched spirits undoubtedly are the principalities controlling Shintoism, which is a spiritualized form of nationalism. The chief visible figure employed by these dark angels is the emperor. In the popular mind, the emperor was himself a deity, but as a part of the World War II peace process, he publicly denied this status, and the Japanese government agreed to separate itself officially from any religious institution, including Shintoism. General MacArthur called for thousands of Christian missionaries. Many went, and Christianity grew well from what are now known as the Seven Wonderful Years. For more than 30 years, it appeared in the visible that Japan was maintaining its status quo. But in the invisible world, the dark angels seemed to be regaining their foothold. The growth of the church slowed to a crawl. Then the emperor died, and his son would become the new emperor. A crucial question revolved around the Daijozi ceremony, the spiritual component of the traditional inauguration of a new emperor. The Daijozi, choreographed through divination and occultic rituals, would climax in a sexual encounter between the new emperor and the sun goddess. I can't say the sun goddess's name. A chief spiritual ruler of the nation. It matters little whether the ensuing intercourse is physical or spiritual. In the invisible world, the two rituals become one flesh, and through its supreme leader, the nation invites demonic control. Unfortunately for Japan, as for Haiti, see, that's what happened when Obama did what he did. Sodom and Gomorrah, the United States became Sodom and Gomorrah. Unfortunately for Japan, as for Haiti, a foolish decision was made, and the new emperor decided to reverse his father's post-World War II position and once again became, in the popular mind, deified through the Daijozi ceremony. Not only that, but the government paid the expenses of the multi-million dollar ritual over the vehement protests of Japanese Christian leaders. Since then, predictably, the overt participation of government officials as national leaders in pilgrimages and rituals connected with traditional Japanese paganism has been on the increase. What this means for the nation's long range remains to be seen, but as at this writing, the Japanese stock market and its ripple effect on both Japanese and international economies is in its steepest decline since World War II, a decline that dates back to the Daijozi ceremony. So you see these demons moving in, and nations are falling. They take them to the ground. All right, how about the United States? The United States is quite different from Haiti and Japan, both of which have reasonably homogeneous populations. Reaffirming Haitian culture roots or Japanese traditional culture has a widely understood meaning, but the United States leads the world in national multiculturalism. In the United States, the reaffirmation could come only culture by culture. It is not currently considered politically correct to reaffirm our colonial Anglo-American cultural roots from New England or Virginia, or Dutch-American roots from New York, or German-American roots from Pennsylvania, or even Scandinavian-American roots. Significantly, those are the United States cultures most strongly influenced by the Christianity emerging from the Protestant Reformation, imperfect as the Christian movement might be. Rather, the new cultural excitement in the United States seems to be revolving around minority cultures such as American Indian in numerous tribal forms, African Americans, and various Asian Americans. See, that's what all this mess is since President Trump came in anyway, when we started to notice things. Among Hispanic Americans, a trend has developed to disparage the European Spanish heritage and emphasize the native Aztec, Mayan, and Inca roots. As our understanding of the visible and the invisible reveals, such cultural reformation can be seen as creative steps forward for our nation, but it also can be an invitation to serious spiritual downfall. I see it as spiritual downfall. I don't see it as anything good about it. If we're going to be one nation under God, we're going to be one nation under God, not multi-gods. The step forward, as has been stressed, is bringing to light the redemptive gifts God has implanted in every culture to glorify Himself. Our cultures are intrinsically good because they reflect the Creator. We should affirm this in every United States culture. But we need also to recognize that Satan has no corrupted cultures, that some of their forms, such as art and architecture, particularly some of their behavior patterns, such as dances and religious rituals, are clearly intended to glorify the creature rather than the Creator. Cultures whose religious roots exalt demon spirits need to be reaffirmed as cautiously in the United States as they should have been in Haiti and Japan. Otherwise, the invisible forces of darkness thus invited into national life will certainly proliferate and provoke the wrath of God. What is the new world order going to be? One God, Satan. Ultimately, that's what all these multicultures are. They're all false gods. He will not stand for spiritual harlotry in the United States any more than he did in Judah in Jeremiah's time. And divine judgment is the predictable outcome. Sadly, rather than relieving human suffering, we may well see its increase. Now, this is one that before I ever read this, I thought about it. Is Hawaii in danger? I'll tell you what, during all this mess, their nation has been devastated. It's been absolutely ripped apart. Hawaii, our 50th state, now has a strong movement among some of its leaders for reformation of Hawaiian culture. On August 21st, 1992, the government of Hawaii, one of their U.S. senators and many other officials, overtly participated in a ritual of traditional Hawaiian paganism billed as a healing ceremony for the uninhabited Kahula'a Island. The ceremony featured offering of coral heads at the altar dedicated to the spirits of darkness and drinking the sacred awa. Pali Kakakoli, the event's leader, interrupted the government's officials' actions as meaning, "Yes, I will support the Hawaiian cultural heritage and everything it means to be a Kanaka Maoli, a true Hawaiian." A stated purpose of this process was to repair the damage done to Hawaii by Christianity. I'm sorry. Reporting on the event, Laurel Murphy says that after the missionaries arrived, the power of the Hawaiian gods began to die, and along with it, the power of the Hawaiian male. Pali Kanakoli knew that the new temple had to be a muahai. These are Hawaiian words. Whatever. It's the family place of worship in old Hawaii where men called on ancestors for help. They're calling them demons. Ironically, the motto of the state of Hawaii is the life of the land is perpetrated in righteousness. This reflects God's redemptive gift for Hawaii. It will be perpetuated if Jesus Christ is exalted as the rightful Lord of Hawaii, bringing glory to the Creator. But the opposite is also a possibility. The death of the land will be perpetuated in unrighteousness. As was mentioned earlier, the wrath of God is poured out on people who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. That's Romans 1:18. By glorifying the creature rather than the Creator. My prayer is that such will not be the case in Hawaii. Conclusion, where do we draw the line? Spiritual mapping is an attempt to offer guidelines. It helps us know when we begin to glorify the creature rather than the Creator. It reveals the invisible powers, both good and evil, behind visible features of everyday life. It provides us new tools for engaging and overcoming the enemy, thus opening the way for the spread of God's kingdom and for His glory to be manifested among the nations. Here's some questions to reflect on. Can you think of any instances apart from those mentioned in the chapter where people openly have given glory to the creature rather than the Creator? Think about the demonic names given to the natural features of the Grand Canyon. Our daughter went there and she said, that's the most demonic feeding place I've ever been to, the Grand Canyon. And everything had some God's name on it and everything. In fact, they brought home a little figurine and they brought it in the house and the cat just would go bananas and making all these hissing and noises every time she'd get around it. So I ended up going outside and smashing it. Yeah, they brought home more than a figurine. All right. Think about the demonic names given to the natural features of the Grand Canyon. Why would they produce righteous rage in some people? Your city has a redemptive gift. What do you think are some possibilities about what the gift is? How about other nearby cities? All right. 4, discuss some of the specifics of the dangers of affirming paganism while attempting to reaffirm ancient cultures. Review the cleansing of Wagner's living room. Would you have removed the puma, the mask, and the lamps, and why? Just some food for thought when we get into this. It goes a lot deeper than just the surface of the entities that we're dealing with when we pray. You know, they say they're ancient cultures. Well, they were, but they were people and cultures that worshiped demons. So, let me see. I might have something else in here. Just a second. I think I do. All right. I read all of this for a reason. We want to be effective in our spiritual mapping and taking down of strongholds. First, the reason for the devil's presence must be addressed. We can look around us and see in plain sight demonic symbolism. In other words, we shouldn't just go off and just start rebuking demons and you leave that and you leave this and all of that. We need to be led. One of our food boxes, for instance, you know, talking about symbolism, our food boxes, certain pyramid. Where do we even begin? Well, maybe we start at the top. Listen to this. For those that are listening to this that think nothing's going on, listen to this. This is by Judy Byington. All tunnels worldwide will be filled up and collapse. Nature reclaims its habitat. The end of the pedophile Satan deep state. Watch the water. Law equals L. L equals land. Equals A. Equals air. Equals water. That's law. Land, air, and the water. L-A-W. Cleansing and flooding the dumps and tunnel systems worldwide needed. They're pure evil. Vatican religion cleansed and currently flooded to become a lake and natural park bird paradise. City of London finance cleaned and currently being flooded to become a lake and nature park bird paradise. Washington, D.C. military cleansed and currently being flooded to become a lake and a natural bird paradise. All right, Matthew 24. That's the three city states. Matthew 24:36. But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall it be, the coming of the Son of Man be. For as the days of Noah, that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. See, they were going to do more flooding than this, but they were concerned that by using the oceans to flood the dumps, that they would offset and disrupt certain currents in the ocean, that animals, you know, they didn't want to disrupt marine life and all of that, and it would take so much water to do so. So that's why there's a lot of flooding going on. They're using the harp, weather warfare, to cause it to rain so they can flood the domes. Okay? I'm asking you to have a different perspective today. Q said symbolism will be their downfall. The tares have now come to the top, and now they are seen for what they really are, and they can be gathered up, weeded out from among God's people, and burned. All right, Revelation 18. Now, we just talked about the three city states are all going to be bird paradises, bird sanctuaries, right here. Verse 1, and after these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lighted with his glory, and he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and it's become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hateful bird. I'm telling you, bird paradise. Understand now what Q has been saying. Their flaunting of their symbols in our face has been what has found them out. Okay.